Welcome to Cinema Vino. This is episode 7 of 8 recorded.
This is Todd.
And this is Travis. Actually, strike that and reverse it. Get my thing down, flip it, and reverse it. Is that how that goes? Probably not.
You're a friend, yeah.
I'd like that song to be played at my funeral someday, by the way. Just when people are filing past my casket. Anywho, we're drinking right now Requiem Cabernet from the Columbia Valley.
It's good shit.
Mm-hmm.
And decanted.
It's, you know, nice and dry. It's got some body to it, but still for a Cabernet, it's pretty friendly, pretty drinkable.
It's decanted. It's lovely.
Travis is singing. I believe that's Bobby Darin.
I've already had some.
He's already activated. But yeah, this is it's a cliche in the industry, food friendly. It would go with all kinds of food.
Like a number 2 from Burger Street with probably, you could do onion rings, but I always go tots.
I was thinking Goldie's Burgers with the pretzel bar. Not the pretzel bar, the pickle bar.
Mm. Pretzel bun?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or a Cinnabon. But yeah, you could do a steak with it. You could do burgers. You could do stuff off the grill. Summertime food. So you could dress it up or dress it down. It's kind of like a black shirt that, you know, you could wear it with jeans. You could wear it with a nice skirt.
Guys, I'm wearing a black shirt.
And yeah, he is poured into this shirt. Travis is looking quite sexy. So anyway, so we're going to be talking about the movies that inspired us to love movies. We're both movie fans. So we're going to talk about the movies that we first saw that made us love movies. And so, and for me, we're drinking this Cabernet because Cabernet, when I started working at the wine store many years ago, this was the wine, Cabernet was what made me love wine in the first place. That's the first wine I got into. It's the first wine I ever really enjoyed drinking. I'm not sure I had ever consumed a full glass of wine before I started there. Don't think I'd ever drank anything like that. So, it was a real eye opener. So we'll start with you. What was your movie that you first saw that made you love movies?
So I'd always been a fan of movies. Obviously, everybody is. It's like girls on Tinder are like, I like to have a good time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody likes fucking movies.
I like to have fun.
But one of the ones that I saw that I was really like, oh, fuck. Like, I need to make a movie. I need to do this. Was Pulp Fiction. And I didn't see it right when it came out in 94. I think I was in middle school, and we had a bunch of friends came over, and we had rented it, and they were like, oh, you gotta fucking watch this movie. And I was like, this just looks fucking weird. I think I saw the commercial or the trailer or something, and it just didn't exactly fill my rice bowl. But when I saw it, I was like, oh, this is fucking badass. And then I had to, like, borrow it from, I think it was Judd back in the day, that I borrowed his VHS tape. My shitty VCR ate it, and then I had to buy him a new copy. I was like, sorry, Judd. Bought myself one as well.
Might as well.
But I wore that thing out, learning the whole, like, Ezekiel 25:17 from Sam Jackson's speeches, mm-hmm. Jules Winfield.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I got my brother's fiance for Christmas. I got her the screenplay in book form. I'm like,
oh, wow.
If you guys are going to get a new house, like, when people come over, they've got to think you're cool.
Mm-hmm.
And if you leave this on your coffee table, somebody's going to be like, this is fucking sweet.
Yeah.
And read it. And there's parts in the screenplay that didn't quite make it into the film. I can't remember any of them. But when I picked this up for, and I started thumbing through it, I started getting immersed. I'm like, wait, I got to fucking wrap this. but yeah, it was Pulp Fiction that really drew me in. I was like, it was Samuel L. Jackson just being a badass, which has become a trope of its own now.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved it at the time, and I'd liked the pacing and the storylines all matching up. It was like, to me, it was a weird Love Actually, where like, oh shit, all the characters know each other, mm-hmm. and all these different little vignettes. Awesome. So it was basically old school Love Actually,
mm-hmm.
as Pulp Fiction.
It's like Dick Sargent and Dick York.
Sergeant York?
Yeah.
You think they wouldn't fucking notice?
Yeah, Pulp Fiction is a beautiful script. It really is. I mean, it's up there. I mean, it's one of those like perfect scripts. It's like the, you know, Casablanca or The Godfather. It really is like that. It's a work of art. It's a more profane work of art than either of those films, but
yeah.
But it is definitely, you know, pop art.
Well, it's the movie where I was like, oh my God, I want to be a filmmaker. And so I grew up to work part-time in a liquor store and work at a library downtown.
Mm-hmm. And kills it at both.
Well, basically.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, that would definitely be a movie on my list as well of something that, you know, I watched it and it blew my mind. You know, just the little sequences in there where it's like Travolta and Samuel Jackson talking about, you know, basically he's just going to walk the earth.
Yeah.
It's like, what you mean walk the earth? Like Kane and Kung Fu. Yes. It's like, this is amazing. I don't really have a grasp. It's one of those movies that it's kind of like Lebowski where you have to watch it a few times to really let it soak in.
Surette may taste like pumpkin pie, but I never know because I never eat the filthy motherfucker. Honestly, like I just, and this may come up, like Tarantino and then oddly like Kevin Smith were two first directors that I became aware of that I would actively like follow what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Just because those two, and I think I finally kind of put my finger on it, just their screenwriting of two people in a room talking about shit, like, fuck, I want to be there in that conversation. Like, I feel like, one, whatever they're talking about is awesome, and I have something to contribute. Like, I want to hang out with the characters that he's got in the room. I'm like, fuck, mm-hmm. that would be great.
Yes, and I agree with that. It's like, to me, I wanted to be in the room with him writing stuff like Clerks or Pulp Fiction. Like, I wanted to hear the process of, like, how they come up with that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, because it's like with those two and like Simon Pegg, there's a few guys, it's like these guys are nerds, these guys are movie nerds, and it's like I like that. You know, it's like you can really feel like they're on your wavelength of, you know, it's like I respect what they're doing. They're, you know, it's like I'm a giant dork about this kind of stuff, and so are they, mm-hmm. and I respect that.
Yes,
it comes through their work, and maybe that's really what makes them so great is like their personality shines through so much in what they do.
And I was realizing again, I mean, it's something I had forgotten, but all of Tarantino's, like, soundtracks for his movies are just great. Mm-hmm. I remember I bought, you know, the Pulp Fiction soundtrack first and really enjoyed, like, all the weird surf music and other shit that they had in there. And then I went back and bought Reservoir Dogs and Jackie Brown. Like, he's introduced me to so many new music and new artists and old artists, sorry, it's basically the genre of movies or music that I dig, much like James Gunn in Guardians of the Galaxy. I mean, a character in the movie was the fucking soundtrack that mm-hmm. was, you know, the ghost of his mom beyond the grave, or, you know, her love for him. So just the way he incorporated that, like, I knew of Bowie before that, but I had never done, like, a deep dive. I'm like, oh, what's this, Moonage Daydream? I've never heard this one before. They don't play this on the radio.
Yeah.
So I did a deep dive after his death, and I was like, well, fuck. Well, I loved it.
Yeah. And, you know, Bowie really proved that, you know, artists, music is just like any other art where you gain a deeper respect, unfortunately, for people after they're gone.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like you really, you appreciate them because you know you're going to get nothing else from them after that. You know, it's permanent, and I think that I always loved Bowie, but I didn't really deeply get into him as much as I did after he passed, because it was like, man, you know, I really want to go back and listen to everything now, because you know that's it.
Yeah.
That's what you got.
It's the period at the end of the sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to go back and read the first chapter again.
And, you know, I remember going through the Picasso Museum in Barcelona, and different rooms, different levels, had different periods of Picasso's, like his blue period, his pigeons, like this different stuff he painted at different times of his life. And Bowie was the same way. You know, he had his Ziggy Stardust period, his Berlin period. You know, he had kind of his more pop-friendly stuff in the 80s, like Modern Love and Let's Dance. You know, he went through all kinds of different phases. And you could do a museum of Bowie the same way, where it's like you go to different periods and see different stuff.
Yeah.
I think Tarantino's like that.
Why don't you tell me about your first pick? A movie that oh Jesus, that is a porn hat. Oh fuck my jeans. All right. What was a influential movie for you when you're tyke or tiny tot?
The real moment for me was Star Wars. I know that's probably a million people. It's like for, you know, musicians seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. It's like, but the text crawl, you know, at the beginning, and then the spaceship coming out of nowhere. It's under attack. You know, princess is in danger. We got the two droids. You know, and then Darth Vader comes on board and he's doing all kinds of Darth Vader stuff. It's like, I was just hooked. You know, it's like, this is, I love movies.
Yeah, talking about music again, mm-hmm. just that iconic score.
Mm-hmm. John Williams.
So good. Yeah. I mean, Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and Superman.
Mm-hmm.
All those scores.
Yes. Indiana Jones is another one for me where it's like, you know, Harrison Ford's in the temple or whatever and the boulder starts rolling after him at the beginning. It's like, oh, this is glorious. Mm-hmm. That's probably the best, that had to have been the best sales pitch in a studio for a studio executive ever of, you know, okay, this is set in the 30s, pre-World War II, globe-trotting archaeologist has to get the Ark of the Covenant and get it before the Nazis do.
Wow.
It's like, and Harrison Ford stars.
Green light.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
It's like, done. Oh, blank check. Whatever you need. Best yes. idea ever. So that was definitely one of mine. Those are both movies that made me just obsessed with movies.
Well, I mean, yeah, you get the whole, the crawl before Star Wars. So it's already like, hey, we've been in this for a little bit. This is to just catch you up. It's like these old great serials, like last time on X-Men. Like, mm-hmm. we need to give you some backstory. And now, boom, we're jumping in it. And then it also all the weird page cuts, like all the different editing.
The wipes, yeah.
Yeah, the wipes. Wiping cuts. And yeah, it just, all of it is gold.
I mean, yeah, it's like previously on Flash Gordon.
Yeah, jeez.
Yeah.
Well, I think I told you, we only had like Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi recorded off of like HBO or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I've only seen the first Star Wars A New Hope a handful of times. The other two I've seen ridiculous amounts of times.
Yeah.
Just pop those in over and over. But I never quite knew or realized where or how it started.
Mm-hmm.
Which was interesting to retroactively go back and see.
Yeah. But yeah, I'd say those two were big for me. And then as I got older, I mean, Pulp Fiction was definitely one of the movies. And then Lawrence of Arabia. It's kind of weird.
I still haven't seen that.
It's a great movie.
Peter O'Toole?
Mm-hmm. And it's a beautiful movie to look at. I mean, I've never seen a theater. I would love to see it on the big screen. But it's, you know, filmed originally in like 70 millimeter. So it's probably one of the most, like, artfully photographed movies ever. I mean, it's, you could pause any given scene and it, at any moment it looks like a painting. It's so perfect. Music's perfect. It has everything that, like, in a way, like we're talking about Star Wars, it's great to look at. The music's perfect. The acting's perfect. Everything just kind of syncs up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like the old director Howard Hawks. His famous quote was that every great movie, they asked him to define what a great movie was, a classic movie, and he said every classic movie has three great scenes and zero bad scenes. And that was it.
Yeah.
And so it's like your great movies, everything clicks, and there's no filler scenes, there's no empty scenes, there's nothing that doesn't make sense, as grammatically shaky as that is.
Like Jaws, would mm-hmm. you say? I mean,
Jaws
damn sure doesn't work, but I wouldn't say that's one of my influential movies, but it's one there where I'm like, this whole fucking thing is beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it has those great moments in it. I mean, the opening scene is, I mean, and that's another thing is all those movies have great opening scenes. Every one of them, they're all incredible. You know, even, you know, Jaws, you think about like the girl getting attacked. It's perfect because you don't see the shark.
Yeah.
The shark not working actually, it works in the movie's favor because it creates a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
It creates tension and suspense and
lets you fill in the blanks with your mind, which is way worse than any animatronic shark.
Mm-hmm. You think about, you know, Robert Shaw's speech in the Indianapolis.
Island of Tenenbaum.
We delivered the bomb.
Hiroshima bomb.
You know, you think about them shooting barrels into the shark. You know, we're going to need a bigger boat. There's just so many good scenes.
All right, I have one weird aside. I'm sure in high school, in speech or something, they would have you, or no, in theater, I think, they would have you do like a monologue or something. I was like, man, Quint's speech would always be great to do in Jaws. But I also thought, is Steve Martin's speech in Roxanne. Yes. I always loved Roxanne when they're doing the 20-something betters. Mm-hmm. For some reason, that's another movie that I fucking love. I wouldn't say it's influential. But another one for me, I would say, is like Superman, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Was great because it was this big, I mean, again, John Williams' score, but there was this big, legendary, iconic thing. I think they got everything right. You know, they just didn't have the budget to do certain things. Mm-hmm. But it was great. And Gene Hackman grew on me as Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Many a time I would run around in my PJs with my undies on the outside to be, you know, I wanted to be costume specific. Mm-hmm. Running around. And then another one for me is Ghostbusters. I started watching Ghostbusters. Again, it was one that I had all the time on VHS. And I would watch those things over and over and over again, mm-hmm. Especially the first one. I think it was a while before I got the second one. But, yeah, that's just weird comedy, sci-fi, not quite horror, but, like, you know, there were some scary elements there for a kid watching. But,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved them both. I really did. I mean, even as a small kid, I loved both Ghostbusters. Yes. I wore them both out. And, you know, I feel like, as a nerdy kid, I kind of identified more with the Dan Aykroyd character. And as I got older, teenage years and beyond, I really began to feel more for Venkman.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, no, I get it. Mm-hmm. It's like what they say about Seinfeld. When you're younger, you love Kramer. But as you get older, you gain a deeper understanding of George. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's funny because it's like, yeah, your allegiances towards characters shift over time. It's like, no, I identify with Bill Murray.
Yeah.
In all things.
It's whatever snapshot in time. Like, what's the difference between you watching Ghostbusters the first time or the 30th time? Mm-hmm. The only difference is you. I mean, the movie's the same. Mm-hmm. They hit the same beats. So it's whether you had a tuna salad sandwich that day that ain't quite agreeing with you and it's affecting your enjoyment of the movie, you know.
And the irony is that I married somebody who hasn't seen, at the time when we got together, hadn't seen a whole lot of movies.
I don't like her. I'll be honest.
And if you told me years ago that I would marry someone, ironically for me, who didn't really have a great interest in movies, I would have said that you had fallen out of the crazy tree.
Well, here's the good thing about, like, good relationships is that you guys, you get to, like, teach each other mm-hmm. shit, right? Mm-hmm. So you're like, oh, man, it's so great that, one, she hasn't seen all these. So you get to be there with her for her, like, de-virginization of watching these films for the first time and get to, like, do a back and forth and, like, you know, pick her brain about it, what she liked, what she didn't, what worked, and if she's interested in seeing more of that. So. Yeah.
And yeah, like she's a trooper. We balance each other out. You know, she's very smart and capable and, you know, talented, and I like movies.
So. Yeah, and she taught you about the female vagina. So it's give and take. Mm-hmm. Got him. Do not edit this out. Leave that in. That's what she said. He learned a lot. I'm so proud of myself.
Travis is activated. I will be honest, another movie that shaped me a lot in terms of comedy was Blazing Saddles.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
good Mel Brooks.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it, and it's one of those things where as a kid, again, you gain a deeper understanding, but as a kid, it was like, oh, the scene farting around the campfire. Mm-hmm. I laughed for about 45 minutes straight at that.
I'd say you've had enough.
I mean, a bunch of, if that doesn't influence and make it like a 10-year-old boy laugh, a bunch of dudes farting around a campfire, mm-hmm. There's no hope for you.
No.
I think it was George Carlin who said, you know you're old when farts aren't fun anymore. And that's the gospel.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all those kind of scenes where it's like, you know, the guy punches a horse in the face. I mean, all that stuff was just like, I mean, but then you grow older and you realize, you know, they're satirizing the racism and bigotry of the old West. I mean, and they do it in a way that's funny.
You also know when you're getting old if you don't drink as heavily during the week because you have responsibilities the next day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fucking pussies.
Damn right. But, yeah, we're going to take a brief break and do what we do, and we'll be right back with some more Cinema Vino. Cinema Vino was filmed before a live studio audience. Actually, that's not true. But this has been another episode of Cinema Vino, and we thank you all gently and kindly, lovingly, for tuning in. We hope this has been a gentle kiss on your forehead.
Don't forget to love each other, and then not to choke on your loved one's hair in the spooning position.
Turn around. Don't drown.